Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Is It Just Me? With me, James Williams.
And me, Jo Elvin. Hello.
Hello. Hi. Here we are again, Jo.
I know, we're in a kitchen.
Yeah, for those of you who aren't familiar, please tell me you are. You're listening every week. We know you are. We love hearing from you. Basically, we're just here to sort of chew the fat and set the world to right. And as always, we're joined by an illustrious guest. This week, we're joined by an old friend of ours, I'd say, Jo.
Absolutely. Ex-Glamour family.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah, that's it.
Writer, author, broadcaster extraordinaire, the lovely Miranda Sawyer.
Hello.
Hi.
Here you are in my kitchen. I feel slightly vulnerable.
Thank you for having us in your kitchen.
Yeah. Also, I love it because it's so close to home. Literally, yeah, this is like a 10-minute walk for me, Miranda.
Yeah,
so you're not... already my favourite guest ever because it
it's
was the most
South
easiest...
London posse, isn't it? I had to get an Uber.
Pray for Jo.
I was so pleased because I'm wearing black and white gingham trousers and he was wearing a black and white gingham shirt.
Oh, that's cool.
And I got in and went, oh wow, gingham twins.
On the day we're recording this, Meghan Markle is coming to Brixton.
We could just walk down the road, couldn't we? Become a royal friend. It's not far.
I saw someone on Gogglebox really slagging her off for
what, being too nice?
For being confident and outspoken. And, you know, and then I think of the times that I get so disappointed that our Princess Kate barely ever speaks.
Yeah, it's
so
true.
What do you want, people?
But it's that funny British thing, isn't it, whereby, you know, there's a very fine line between being confident and then being a bit full of yourself.
There's a legacy from Princess Diana. So the reason why people liked Princess Diana at the beginning was because she was modest and shy. Do you remember that, you know, that awful shot of with her with a terrible long slightly Durandal skirt and the light through her legs? So she was innocently pretty. Like, supposedly she didn't know how good looking she was, although of course she did, because how would you not know? That's how we officially want our princesses to be. So, you know, it's a really old kind of trope, isn't it, about that you're really beautiful, but you don't know it.
Absolutely.
You see it right the way through all the terrible films that my daughter likes. You know, you have to be gorgeous, but like kind of, you know, naturally
unaware.
Yeah. You know? Whereas I just think that's a whole load of rubbish. So if you get somebody like Meghan Markle, who is obviously, I mean, you know, she is naturally gorgeous. She just chooses to make the most of herself.
As Donald Trump might say, she's a total 10.
Exactly. So she is a total 10, but she chooses to present herself in a polished, confident, pulled together manner. And we're a bit like, ooh, she's a bit for this stuff, because she actually butters.
She's got that American poise and confidence that I would love to bottle.
Yeah.
I love that they are unapologetically confident.
Yeah, I think she's great. Fine. Well, yeah, I've got no problem with it at all.
See, I love her. I love them both. You know, and I'm not the biggest royalist in the world, but I have to say I love her and Harry together, because I actually think what I love about them is they're quite unguarded. You know, they genuinely seem like they're not...
certainly seem like they're shagging, don't they?
Absolutely.
Yes, certainly, there's a little frisson more
when
than a little
not,
one.
I don't think they're waiting till the wedding night.
When they're not roasting a chicken. Yeah. It's like, roast chicken, shag.
Yes.
Roast another chicken, shag. I mean, it's perfect.
Yeah. Sometimes a terrible dancing to hip-hop and then back.
Anyway,
they're visiting Represent, which is... a youth radio station down the road from here, which I've actually written about. It's a really brilliant station who take people, like, essentially they take kind of any young person really over the age of 16. They kind of work with some people who are younger, and then they train them, and you can be like a gopher, or you can be trained in production, or you can be trained as a DJ, I suppose. You don't want to say DJ, but anyway, presenter. But all the people that they have on there are really good. And one of the reasons why they're really good is because they're so young, they're really in contact with music. So, yeah. You know, obviously, I mean, I'm still interested in music. I'm ancient, but I'm still interested in music. But it's they're so hot on music that they're way ahead of, like, Radio 1, mm. Because they're just out all the time.
Yeah.
And they bring stuff in, and they're literally kind of ripping MP3s rather than, or probably MP4s now, but, like, not, you know, it's not even stuff that's out. Mm. So they're really, really good. And the fact that she's bringing him there is really good. And also
that
she kind of legitimizes him going in there, essentially, because she's of dual heritage. You know, yeah. So it always seems a bit weird when you have kind of like, you know, really posh white guy going in to represent. You know, I mean, it's fine because it raises a profile, but it does seem a bit weird. But because she's of dual heritage, it kind of gives him the legitimacy to go in, really.
I also
think it's great that, you know, and the thing she said was when she took on the official role, wasn't it? She wanted to sort of support those smaller organisations. Yeah. So I do think it's a really great move, and it's great to see.
And it's fun, and it's a really good radio station. If you must listen.
Will you be going down there and fangirling later?
I don't know. Can you imagine me at the back waving my mobile phone?
Yeah.
Hi, Megan.
With your little Union Jack plastic topper on.
Perhaps not.
Yeah.
No, I think not.
She should have come in for coffee, like a lovely cup of coffee, Miranda.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, with our special coffee maker.
Yes. Anyway, let's talk about you.
What's
my amazing coffee.
Yeah. Woohoo. What is going on with you? Now, I know you had an excellent book out last year called Out of Time.
I did. That was about...
still talking about.
Yes, it's about middle age. That's because I've milked it for a long time. That's one should. Well, I mean, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into a book.
It's hard out there for authors.
How do you do it? See, I wish I haven't got the discipline to write a book, but I wish I did.
It's really hard. And that one actually took a really long time because essentially it's about middle age and how you deal with it, really. Especially if you're of a particular generation, because everyone is of a particular generation, aren't they? And if you were young in the 90s and you had a kind of almost like an expectation that middle age would never hit you, which I think is pretty standard, but also there was a belief in youth culture, wasn't
there?
That's
the thing, the way all the youth were carrying on in the 90s, I think it was a fair bet that nobody would make it to the 90s.
Quite a lot of them didn't.
Yeah, yeah.
But also there was an idea which did work. I'm so sorry about the dog scratching. Really, you know, she never normally does.
Just as long as everyone knows it is the dog.
Yeah.
It's not
the the gingham trousers playing up.
Yeah.
So with the youth culture in the 90s, I think what was interesting about it was if you think about all those kind of alternative people like Jarvis Cocker or even Kate Moss or Liam Gallagher or Irving Welsh, all those kind of people really were normally, they would have had a bit of fame, but they would have been on the alternative side of culture, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
And they were... just for some reason in the 90s all that stuff got completely legitimised and became absolutely central to all our culture. So it was like your mates you know, but suddenly were being welcomed by Tony Blair into number 10 and you were like, oh my god, we won. All the people we like that are really good are succeeding. So you felt like there was a huge kind of push towards a culture that you enjoyed and that could work, you know, whether it was music or clubbing or art or fashion or all those things, you know, Damien Hirst, people like that.
Yeah.
And you thought, right, this is it. We've kind of swept aside the establishment. Everything's going to be all right. Hurrah, hurrah. And then A, the establishment never lets you sweep them aside. And B, the internet happened. So everything went a bit wrong. Because you thought you're going to be able to make a career in all these different kinds of culture. And of course, the internet just changed all that in terms of monetization. So, and you get older. So, you know, if you are somebody who was, say, a comedian in the 90s, that's a really great... I mean, it was a really great time to be a comedian in the 90s, wasn't it? It was incredibly popular, it was really successful.
And everybody felt like a maverick. And,
yeah, it was great. But obviously, it's a little bit harder if you're in your 40s and you've got a family, you've got to kind of drive up and down the M1 at 2 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday night in order to earn, like, 300 quid.
Mm.
It's quite hard.
Yeah.
So, A, you know, obviously all those... You know, part of me was having a big problem with the idea of the things that I thought was going to be really great and support me through the rest of my life and I really enjoyed, becomes trickier when you get older. It's harder to be freelance when you're older because you shouldn't think, oh my God, I've got kids.
Yeah.
I have to feed them. This is appalling. And, like, you know, I have to pay the mortgage and that kind of freelance life is quite difficult.
It isn't unique to middle age, though, is it? That the... You know, the economy is just being revolutionized at the moment.
Yeah.
And there used to be this linear sort of projection of like, you know, if I start out here and I work very hard, everything will kind of work out.
Yeah.
And that's all been thrown up in the air. Well, and also, I think for young people as well.
The way people work as well, you know, the idea that you'd be in a job or a vocation for life. People now have several different jobs and vocations and side hustles and, you know, just the whole way we work is changing.
Yeah, completely. And also, there was this weird research I did for the book. Part of it, you know, it's interesting now. I'm 50 now, and you actually 51. I was 51 the other day. Sorry.
Oh, happy birthday!
Happy birthday! Thank you. Forgot about that. Yeah. But anyway, so I'm in my 50s. But there's a point. So what used to happen was that you would work very hard, and then you'd hit 50, and you would be made redundant. And it was pretty standard, actually, for a lot of people. Yeah, it's quite tricky.
But what used to happen
was that if you were working class, quite often you were made redundant because you were working in a physical job and it wasn't good for you anymore. So you would go on the sick, right? So you'd get some kind of benefits that would pay you, right? And if you were middle class, you would have pensions and kind of schemes that would support you. So if you were sacked, you would then, you know, live off that. But of course, nobody has that anymore. Yeah. There are no benefits like that. Nobody has a pension like that unless they were already minted anyway. So that kind of weird, you know, work, and then retirement for the rest of my life doesn't exist. So you're just going to have to keep on working. And part of me is like, cheers, I'd rather. I don't want to just, you know,
sit around and do nothing.
No, I don't.
But there comes a point in where you're thinking, well, what will I do when I'm 60?
Mm.
You know?
Yeah, well, the difficulty is, I think it's weird if you're a writer, because you think, okay, well, writing, you know, essentially you're just sitting on your bum and having ideas, aren't you? So it's not too physical.
Yeah.
But you kind of think, well, will anybody want my ideas?
They'll want your ideas, but I think for some reason the currency for journalism and writing is becoming cheaper and cheaper.
Mm. Yeah.
And I don't know if that will change going forward.
Yeah.
But what conclusions did you come... Did you feel like the book was sort of therapy for you? Or?
A bit, yeah. I mean, I think all writing's a bit of therapy, really. Mm. You know, because if you're interested in something and you're trying to get to grips
probably,
with it, there's something...
Probably not my 800 words for the Daily Mail on wearing ultraviolet. I didn't think that... I'm not sure if that's particularly therapeutic, but yeah.
Will you wear ultraviolet again?
I enjoy it.
Yes, exactly.
I enjoy my time.
Yeah. See, there's some kind of therapy in that.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really, because I was trying to work... You know, the problem was I was having a midlife crisis, but I didn't have time to have a midlife crisis, because who has time to have a midlife crisis, you know?
Especially so I was having it in the middle.
My kids were little. I was like in the middle of the night trying to work out what I was going to do. Plus, you know, everyone else who was having a midlife crisis, I looked at all these books, and they were all written by men. And what they all seemed to do was, you know, go off on a big trip. So off they went, you know, exploring themselves.
In their sports cars.
Yeah, and the sports car on a bike. There's a lot of bike.
Or the younger woman.
Or they would go and explore themselves by doing yoga or this and the other. And I remember saying to my husband, you know, if I write this book, it'll be all right if I kind of like, you know, use this midlife crisis to go out and kind of discover myself by meeting, you know, important, you know, in, you know, clever people who know more than me. And he went, that's absolutely fine if you take the kids. So that's just not happening. Do you know what I mean? I'm not, you know, just looking this kind of 1 year old. Sorry about this.
That reminds me, years ago I joked that we've only had one child, but I said, we were talking about maybe having a second. I said, as a joke, I said, well, I'll tell you what, if I have a second one, I'm definitely getting a boob job after that. And his only response was, if you think you're getting a few nights away in hospital when I've got two kids.
Have a boob job and he's at home.
Also, I love the idea that recovering from major surgery is still like considered a holiday rather than being at home with two kids.
Totally, I think it is.
Yeah. So anyway, I went off, didn't I? But I think it was basically when I was doing this book, it took me ages because I was having kids and having a bloody midlife crisis. And then the other side of it, it did help, mostly because that most journalism, if you're writing about stuff, you don't know about it. So you think, oh, well, I'll go and ask this person who knows more than me, or this person that knows more than me. And so by the end of it, you think, oh, now I understand a little bit more why I might be feeling like that. And one of the things that I did come away with some of the feelings that I had around midlife, are kind of not my fault. So, you know, I live in London. I live in a flat. Here is our flat. It's a nice flat. It's a big flat. No garden. I had this huge crisis about no garden. No garden, I'm letting my kids down.
Did you feel like that was a status hallmark sort of a thing?
Yeah, I failed. And there was no way we could get a garden unless we moved right out of London, which I didn't want to do. And I became obsessed with, you know, there's all these bloody property programs, Grand Designs, you know, the ones with the big glass boxes.
I can't watch Grand Designs. It's like, you know, they say that...
it makes you feel ill.
Well, for years I was criticised for, you know, skinny models make people feel terrible. It's property shows and property mags that make me feel terrible.
Yeah, and we've had decades of them now.
Yeah.
Like decades and decades with, you know, Kirsty and Phil all the way through. So it's a kind of gnawing in your stomach that your house is terrible.
You have failed!
Yes, exactly, you have failed, your house is rubbish.
You gardenless loser.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, I'm garden
free bastard.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have an actual house.
Yeah.
So, but then I kind of like, I came out the other side and I thought, okay, this is pretty much not your fault. You know, you live in an economy that for some reason has made house prices rise like nobody ever expected. So, and you, that's not my fault. I didn't even vote for the bloody Tories. I didn't vote for any, I've never voted Tory in my life. So it's not my fault. So there are some things that you can't do anything about, you know, and you just have to kind of work out what you can do stuff about and what you can't do stuff about and what you really want to do and what you don't. So you might, you know, one of the things that's very standard in the 40s and 50s that people go, I must run a triathlon or I must run a bloody marathon or whatever.
No.
So what you have to work out is,
those people.
Do you want to run a marathon or do you want to have run a marathon?
I don't want to do either of those things.
Okay. But if you, I mean, essentially most people want to have run a marathon.
Say you've done it.
Because if you want to run a marathon.
The analogy is not working on me. But,
if you want to run a marathon, you have to get up every day at 6 and, and do the stuff.
Put
the hours in or you're going to die.
Yeah.
So that is that really what you want to do? Because if you break it down, that's what you want to do. It's a bit like, you know, I mean,
I know what this is. This is my writing a book. I don't want to write a book. I want to have written a book.
Yeah. But it's a bucket list thing, isn't it?
It's the same thing. Well, it's also, it's what you can be asked to do.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds a bit weird, but if you can be asked to do something, then that's great. And if you can't, fine.
Yeah.
You know, I can't be asked to run a marathon. It just, you know, it's not going to make me feel amazing. I have run. I sometimes run now. And I run very, very, very slowly. I mean, I have been laughed at by teenagers. You know, it's fine. I run very slowly and I'm not going to run a bloody marathon.
I think you're right about choices though, because like, you know, sometimes we all have that thing, you've ever sort of like whinged to your other half or friends, like, how can they afford that many holidays? Why can't we? And it's my husband always says to me, well, that's obviously what they've prioritised.
Mm. Yeah.
We prioritise
something else.
Other things.
Yeah.
So, and it's kind of that thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And it's to do with, what you can accept and what you want, what you can change. Because everybody needs a bit of change in their life, or they're just sitting in the sofa watching Match of the Day. I mean, you need a bit of change in your life, and you need to have a few aims. But actually, I think the problem is that when you hit midlife, there's a huge sense of I've done it all wrong. It's a really common feeling. It's like, oh my god, I should have been an artist. Oh my god, I should have been a lawyer. I should have married someone else. I should have done this, all this, in the other way. And you have to. And that's a really strong feeling, which is very understandable. But the instinct, once you have that, is to throw everything out. So that's why people run off with somebody else or, you know, get a sports car or launch a bloody website or something. I don't know. But they do something that's quite big because they feel like everything's wrong. And actually, if you unpick it and go right into the everyday living of your life, you find that not everything is wrong.
Yeah.
It's just your expectations around certain things aren't quite right, or you haven't adjusted to the fact that you're actually a bit older than you thought you were. And so once you've worked that out, then you can think, okay, well, what I'd really like to do is go to Los Angeles with the kids next Christmas, for instance. So how are we going to do that? That would be really good fun. Let's try and make it really fun. Let's try and do it so it doesn't bankrupt us. How are we going to do that? And then you've got something, you know, it sounds really boring, but it's actually something you think, oh my God, this is just, it'll be really good.
It's such important mental health housekeeping.
Yes.
To think of it that way, I think.
It's admin. You have to kind of adjust the admin in your head.
Isn't it also about, I think, realising that there's not a one-size-fits-all life plan?
Yeah.
You know, not everyone is going to have that life plan that's going to fit for everybody or work for everybody. And I think that's what it's this thing about comparing yourself or literally having a mental checklist or thinking, I'm a loser, I haven't done this by a certain age.
But we all have that. That's the problem, isn't it? I mean, I think the compare thing is really important. But also, because generally we have all those myths anyway, which come right when you're really, really little. And you know, if you have kids, you definitely know this. It's like when I get married, or if I fall in love, and so there's certain checklists. You know, I'm going to do this for a living. I'm going to, you know, I'm definitely going to have some kind of partner. You know, maybe I'll have kids. Maybe I'm going to live here. So those are those checklists. And then capitalism gives you a massive bloody checklist, which included mine in my head was a house with a big glass box on the back, which I've singularly failed to do and will not get. So, you know, you will be told all the way through your lives that there are ticks that you should have done that you haven't. Mm. And so you're automatically going to feel a bit weird about it. So you just have to think, okay, some of these things are just rubbish. But you know, and you know what it's like? Sometimes when you feel strong, you're like, sod you all.
Exactly,
it's fine. And then sometimes when you feel a bit weak, you're like, oh my God, I really have failed.
So do you sometimes refer to your book in those moments? You think, I need to remind myself
of my rational side of this.
I really recommend it for anybody who needs that.
Yeah, towards
just
the end, there's a few things.
Just that mental reset,
you know? Yeah, there's a bit at the back where I think, okay, just write a few things down. and the things that you can do. And they only have to be about three.
A letter just to myself. Just write
three things down I can do. Yeah. One is not run a marathon. There you go. That's it.
So very good word to live
not
by.
Run a marathon.
No. Yeah. No, I haven't got time for training. Ross would also make me take the child. Training.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. All that. Yeah, I know. Yeah, exactly. You'd be lumping along. The child and the dog. Come on. It'd be great. It's going to be fab.
Oh, my God.
I know. Yeah, marathon. It was funny. I spoke to this bloke at Men's Health. And he'd been working there for a bit, and he said it is very interesting about triathlons and marathons, because essentially, when he started working at Men's Health, triathlons were for loonies. Like, no one did a triathlon unless you were super mega fit and a bit bored, and now everyone's doing them, and that and Tough Mudders. And
not me. Well, isn't it for, mainly for men having a midlife crisis? Especially.
There is that, but it's also mad young people.
It's the mammals, middle-aged men in Lycra.
Yeah, it's definitely, that's important. That's a definitely important midlife subset, I have to say. And may I just warn everybody that the peak time to have a heart attack, if you won't do that kind of thing, is 49 while you're running a marathon if you're a bloke.
Oh, gosh.
49.
So if I'm going to
don't run a marathon. Don't run a marathon.
On that note.
And if you're doing a triathlon, it's when you're swimming. Don't do this, don't do it.
Gosh, you know loads of good things.
Yeah, good facts, huh? I know, I'm great at this. I've got some really depressing facts.
I was going to say, on to some more morbid facts.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, these are all my reasons for not running a marathon. Just don't bother.
Well, I can't wait to hear what you've got to say about our three Is It Just Me topics. Because I feel like we're going to really set the world to several rights now.
Absolutely. Is it just me that thinks it's perfectly all right to tell people what you really think of them?
Yes, it is. Although I just told you what I really think.
Yeah. She couldn't wait to tell me.
It's just you. No, I don't like those people. No.
Well, the people that say the truth all the time.
Well, because the thing is, telling people what you really think, it's never a... It's always... Do you know it's a negative thing?
It's very rare they say, can I just tell you, I really love you. It's very rare, complimentary, I do agree with you.
You know, when I was at Glamour, if the boss wanted to see me, it wasn't to say, just want to say, here's
everything's
another.
Everything's great.
Great job.
Yeah, it was always something terrible.
A bit iffy.
Yeah. Feedback. Yeah. Feedback's never really positive, is it?
It's always like, they don't know if you've heard our news, and you're like, our news. Like, not, yeah, okay, brilliant. Yeah. I've got the sack. I've had that loads of times.
But it's the just being honest people. Yeah. I don't like those people.
No, I agree, but I would like to argue for it, right? I definitely, when you first think about this particular topic, you think of awful Big Brother contestants, don't you? Just going, you know, take me or leave me.
I say what I think. I do
what I think, you know, and now, you know, you want to know what I think of you. Well, here you are. Yeah. And yeah, that's awful. Because what they're actually doing is not telling you what they really think of you. They're just projecting their fear onto you. So, you know, it's exactly the same as the kind of being jealous of people with a glass box on the back of their head. They're going, you have this, and it hits somewhere inside me, makes me feel really nervous.
And I want to make you feel bad about it.
So, so you're making me feel bad, so I'm going to make you feel bad, right? So, that's rubbish. And when we just say that on the table, that's a terrible way to behave, and it's not right.
Very poor character.
Yes, I don't like it at all. However, I do think there's a way that we all have to learn about telling people, negotiating relationships in a truthful manner, right? And it's really hard, and it's actually harder, I think. It's hard enough within a relationship, it's really hard with friends.
Yeah.
It's like
totally
impossible with friends. I find it really, really, really hard. But I'm trying to, as part of my midlife crisis, to negotiate around those things. So what you have to learn to say is, basically, what you have to say to your friend if they're saying something or you feel like you're not getting your word in edgeways or whatever, you have to say, you have to work out a negotiation of saying something that's truthful to them that can then carry on the relationship or alter the relationship so it works better for you.
Yeah.
And the only way of doing that really is to sometimes call out what's happening. This is a bit easier with people that you don't know well, so it's easier in a kind of work situation. So if you have a situation where your boss says something like, so we were thinking of putting you on such and such and such initiative, and you can just say, okay, I need a bit of time to think about that. That's one thing. Or you can say, okay, you can say something quite clear. Like you can say, okay, this is making me feel a bit unsure about things, so I'm just going to take a time of doing it. But what you can do essentially is say, this is making me feel like this right now.
Yes.
So I might have to step away for a bit and then come back. And once you learn how to isolate your feelings, then you can work out why they're making you feel like that and what can be done about it.
Yeah. Mm.
And it's like the opposite of what the Big Brother contestants do, because they just feel scared. So they go, fuck fuck you, yeah. I'm going to kill you now.
Yeah.
And if you can say, okay, this is making me feel scared. I feel really weird now. Why do I feel scared? So then you step away. I mean, as you get older, you actually learn to think, okay, you know quite quickly why it's making you feel weird. You can say, this is making me feel weird because of this, so I'm going to have to step out now.
Because could you apply that, though, in a personal situation? Because my feeling is...
It's really hard. You can do it, but it's very therapy speak.
Okay, because all I would think is if I asked you something for an honest question about myself, and you went, okay, I'm not sure I feel, I need some time to think about it, that would make me think, oh my God, it's something really bad, she's got to go away and think about a diplomatic way of telling me.
But it wouldn't be like that, because that's not quite the situation. It's more like that the person is saying, well, you did this and da 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 da, and what about that? And you have to say, yeah, well, actually, it wasn't quite like that, and the way that this conversation is going is making me feel a bit upset.
Oh, right,
but
yeah.
do you want to hear from your favourite people in the world, the ways in which they find you annoying, or...
Well, sometimes I think it can be useful, because the problem is, with the older we get, with long-term relationships, that you need to know.
Oh, I'm fine with that in a marriage. I'm thinking about my friends.
Yeah, but also, sometimes, you know, if you're kind of like constantly, you know, going, I've bought a theatre ticket for you and your friend's like, I fucking hate the theatre, please, can we stop?
Or we
only ever do one thing, or you only communicate in one way.
But I would also say you're probably more likely to be your worst version of yourself with the people you know the best. You know, there's something about social constraints, which if you don't know people that well, you put on a much better set of manners, you're not as honest, you're more of a filter. Whereas you're probably your most blunt or honest or a bit tactless with the people you know and love the most.
Yeah, I think that. But what I would also say is the people who you feel your best with, it's good to spend time with those people, right? So you can have friends and you used to feel like you're best with them, and then actually it's not so good now.
Yeah.
And maybe you just need to take a step back and maybe it'll come back. Or you find a new friend. But you need to surround yourself with people where you feel good, or actually you're going to get really down in the dumps and you're going to be stuck in a kind of rut of people. I'm not saying get cold all your friends, because I think that's a bad idea, because obviously some of the versions of you, a nice version of you, will be an old version that they've known for a very long time.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, you need to, if you're constantly in a friendship or relationship where all you're doing, for instance, is just sniping and saying, well, moo and grumping and stuff, that actually isn't great.
No.
See, I'm probably not a very good grown-up with stuff like this. If the people in my life who I've suddenly realised, you know, you have those interactions with people and you come away, you don't feel great and you can't really work out why, and then you start to realise it's because they're sort of like they're knocking your confidence, or they're draining your energy, or they're sort of like really down all the time, and it's something I kind of just tend to
pull away.
Yeah, rather than say, do you know what, I'm going to tell you how you're making me feel.
No, I completely agree. Yeah. And sometimes there's a nicer way of doing it. You know, you know, who wants to be confronted with their faults every day? We've all got millions. So I completely agree. But I do think that sometimes that might have to happen. I mean, sometimes it might have to happen. You just say, you know what? You know, I mean, you know, there's a classic relationship always, I think, with mothers and daughters, you know, like my mum, I love my mum, but, you know, she has a tendency to phone at 8:30 in the morning. It's much.
That's not a busy time when you've got two children.
No. So literally you just have to say, I can't talk now. You can't phone me now. And then if you're, or if she says something and you just say, you know what, you're really panicking me now because you're just panicking me about stuff that doesn't matter. So can we talk about it in a different way?
Yeah.
You know, my mum, God love her, I love my mum, but she said, you know, I'll say something, it'll be anything to do with change. Like, we're getting a dog, that's a classic, or somebody's moving in the family. And she goes, oh no. Oh my God, no. And I'm like, it's a dog. How can you be negative about getting a puppy? Oh my God.
So her default setting is panic.
Yeah, panic and like, you know, and panic and kind of this is all going to go wrong. I'm going, it's a puppy. Yeah. Look at the puppy. The puppy really nice. The puppy brings smiles.
Does she ever get satisfaction saying, I told you.
I mean, I pointed it out to her and she said, yes, sorry, I think I'm not very good with change. I'm going, it's a puppy. Hold the puppy.
But my other thing about this whole sort of honesty thing is I think I am also one of these people, and I don't mean this as a way of sort of copping out, but I either go very quiet, because I basically don't lie, I don't like lying. So my options are either to tell you the truth or to not say anything. And also I have one of those, I have no poker face. So even if I don't say anything, my face will normally give me totally away, or at least make it very clear where I stand on what they're talking about. So I always find I might as well tell the truth anyway because everyone kind of knows what I'm thinking anyway.
Yeah, because it's coming out of your eyes.
Yeah, it's literally like, I'm one of those terrible like eye rollers and I know it winds people up and I try to contain it and control it, but I'm not aware I'm doing it. But you know, if somebody's saying something, I'm like literally full of shit. The eyes start rolling and I'm blissfully unaware of it and everyone's just laughing.
Well, that's all right though. I mean, that's because that's mostly opinions. Most people are eye rolling is about opinions. It's more to do with...
I think we're slightly talking about two different things. I think there's that your actual relationships that you have where I think that's a healthy relationship if you can be honest with each other.
Yeah.
It's the people, the transitory people in my life, the peripheral people who say, I mean, I just think you look terrible today.
Oh my God.
You know, I'm just being honest. Just being honest. Yeah. You know, that those people can...
You don't give a shit about those people. That's the thing.
No,
it's like everything. You only really care about the opinions of the people you care about.
Yeah,
I think horrible insults can stick.
Yeah, and I think the problem.
Well, no, I mean deep down, that's what you should think. Yeah, I'm not saying we all feel that way, but we should really not listen to people.
There is an element also with social media where you learn to feel that, don't you? So you learn to think. You know what? I'm not interested because there's so whatever you write. You know, you will get hate mail. I remember ages ago at the beginning of The Guardian does this terrible thing where, you know, he opens all the comments at the bottom of whatever you write, you know, and it's just literally like, no, we hate you. Your
comment is free.
Yeah, come here. Thanks so much. Anyway, ages ago, I'm not particularly interested in cooking, and I wrote a feature about Nando's for the Observer Food magazine. And I think they asked me to do it because obviously I was the only person within the Observer who ate Nando's. And I was like, great, because I love Nando's. And I went out and I did this article and I was really happy with it. I worked really hard on it. And it was actually quite difficult because the Nando's PR was absolutely right. Yeah. And I had to go out and get all these things anyway. Anyway, I wrote this bloody piece on Nando's saying why I liked it. You know, got a picture of Chipmunk and like, you know, Talisa, you know, holding up their Nando's
pack. Amazing.
And the vitriol, I cannot tell you, it was page upon page upon page about how I must have been paid by the PR. They always think you've been paid by the PR.
I know.
I wish
look,
I was paid
got a
by
big
any
bloody
PR.
Paper to fill.
Yeah, exactly. How they hated it. I mean, it was just hilarious. And I was, because it was early on in the comment history, I took every comment to heart. And then I thought, I'm literally on the fourth page. I just thought, why am I reading it?
Yeah.
It's all noise.
It's just like,
remember that. It's just noise. Yeah.
And just remember that Nando's
made.
Is all right.
Yeah.
It's okay. If you've got kids, it's all right.
Yeah.
There's worse things than that.
Nando's. Absolutely.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Is it just me who, as a grown adult lady woman, has had, like, you know, full-blown crushes on celebrities? Is that something that we need to outgrow when we've outgrown Just 17 magazine? Or,
well, see, I have a theory about this as a full-grown lady woman myself.
Right.
So my theory about this is I was never actually one for crushes as a teenager. I didn't really put posters up on my walls. I didn't really cover my books or anything like that. Which is why I think I ended up working in teen magazines, because I actually didn't get into teen magazines because I literally wanted to meet people. I actually just got into teen magazines because I wanted to be a journalist.
Wanted to meet pop stars.
Oh, see, I think in teen magazines you were divided into two people. Yeah. The fans who became journalists and then people who just wanted to become journalists. Anyway, that sounds really smug, but you know what I mean? But anyway, but going back to not really being one for crushes as a teenager, but I think since the advent of things like Instagram, I think I'm now developing crushes because of Instagram. Because you follow people...
God, you're so modern.
I know, right? Yeah, it's with the kids.
It's hitting right in the modern heart.
Yeah. So it's true, because I do think, because I never used to be that way. Now, because I guess you get such a daily insight in certain people's lives, and I think, you know, you can touch with it. It's not just, of course, it's a lot about how they look, of course. Yeah. Let's be really shallow.
Who are your crushes? Let's be very specific.
But to be honest, it's not even like famous people. It's not even famous people. It can just be like, either you go into Instagram for things like, you know, cooking inspiration, or you go into fitness inspiration, or you're just home interiors porn, all that kind of stuff. So it's about really, of course, what they look like, but also just the fact that, oh God, they actually get up and off their arse and they do stuff and, you know, and...
I have got, it's really funny because I was thinking, I don't have one. And I thought, oh no, I do. And it's quite an obscure one, but I do. So basically this is so tragic. Bear in mind my age, I'm 51. Right? he is a grime artist called Jamie, who's Skepta's brother, right? And he spells his name J-M-E. And I think he's really brilliant. And he's beautiful. His music is great. So I always thought, I liked him, I don't know, from 2-3 years ago or something. And then we had this weird thing where I discovered that my son liked him as well, but via a different route. He'd found him via YouTube and kind of people who play football games on YouTube. And he'd found Jamie this way. And I was like, he's a really brilliant grime artist. Did you know that? So then we bonded on the videos and we both liked the music. We played the music in the car. We all like music. And then basically I was following him on Twitter, and he's just too cool for school. So he follows no one on Twitter.
Oh.
He follows zero people. But he has quite an interesting and unusual way of thinking. So he'll just do things like he's never watched a film because it's too long.
You love him.
I do love him.
Yeah.
He's not married and having a kid, of course, but that's fine.
He's never watched a film.
No, he's not interested in it because he thinks it's too...
Miranda.
No, he's great. He's really funny. He's completely vegan.
How'd you do on date night?
Well, because they just, you know, he's interested in music, veganism, computer games... kind of weird eco cars. Very specific.
But don't you think there's something a bit... I'm going to ask it. Oh, this is going to be very controversial now. I love her, but the one thing that puts me slightly off Beyoncé is the fact she follows nobody on Instagram. And in my head, there's something a little bit smug about that.
Also, I think she's copying Jamie. That's what I'd say.
The inferred sort of suggestion there is, it's all about me. I have no interest in anybody else. This is just about me and me showing off.
It's just really, you know, how are you going to stalk him if he's not on Instagram?
Well, he doesn't do Instagram. He does stuff on Twitter. But anyway.
I don't think he's the one for you.
Anyway, he definitely, and then.
I think her husband might disagree. Yeah.
And then. Paddy and my son, who when he went to this concert, I think was 11, with his little mate, went to Boy Better Know, which is the kind of grime crew that Jamie is part of. They had a big thing on O2 all day, right? Went along. It was the greatest day of his life. And he bloody met Jamie, got a selfie with him. I was gutted.
When you're jealous of your kids.
It was sad. I came back and he was like he got videos and obviously had, you know that thing where you see kids and they've been somewhere that's just blown their minds. It's so brilliant. His eyes were like saucers. He couldn't believe how great everything was. And he showed me his phone and he got a bloody selfie with Jamie. And I was like, that's great, darling. And I had to go for a walk around. Just walk around the house. Like, I can't believe you met Jamie. I've asked for an interview for years and years and years. And he won't be interviewed.
Have you ever tweeted him?
Yes, I've had a response.
Oh, that's good.
I have had a response, but he won't be interviewed.
Oh, it's so annoying.
I'm just loving the sort of Freaky Friday vibe of that, where you're supposed to be the one that's impressing your kids with all the people you're interviewing and meeting, and then suddenly this shift in power.
Is it the unattainability that's safe and alluring?
You know what it makes me miss? It makes me miss Smash Hits. So Smash Hits was obviously a great magazine, but you could treat certain artists in a really fun way. And I think there's a whole kind of swathe of grime artists that you could feature so brilliantly in Smash Hits that it makes me, there's something in my, you know, I can feel a twist in my stomach, like, oh man, I wish Smash Hits would just do it. It would be so funny. Yeah. It would be so brilliant. He would be great in Smash Hits.
If he would do it.
If he would do it, but like, you know, it would just be brilliant. And it's like, it's part of me, it's just journalism. I just want to interview him in a Smash Hits style. And it would be just so great. And,
well, no doubt he's listening. I'm sure he's a big fan of
Smash Hits. He is a massive fan. Don't be sarcastic.
How dare you?
It's just that. He's like perfect Smash Hits fodder because he's just odd enough and interesting enough. He'd just be
way
brilliant.
More shallow than that.
I was going to say, come on, you've been a bit too quiet on this subject for my liking. I know you like a little
perv. Who do you love?
I have discussed it. Well, this is even worse because I think I could be his mother.
But, well, I probably could be Jenny. He's probably about 30.
It's Riz Ahmed is just so damn handsome.
He's lovely. Oh, my God. I went up to him in the street and said, I think you're really great, and then ran away like a really sad person.
I wouldn't even be able to do that. He's so handsome.
Telling people what you think of them, that's a nice way.
That's nice. I just went up to him and said, I think you're really...
What did he say?
He was really nice, but it was really embarrassing because it was one of those... It was behind the Tate Modern. And there was no one else. It wasn't like a busy street. I just saw him and I thought, oh my God, I love you. And then went, I think you're really brilliant. I just want to say.
No, I never.
And then had that really embarrassing thing where it was actually quite an empty street, then had to walk off like by myself.
Well, that's exactly why I never ever want to meet him, because I'll just be an idiot.
Yeah, he's incredibly charming. Because I nearly said it before as well, because I saw him in a cafe and he was also having a business meeting. I thought, and I thought, I can't interrupt a business meeting, but I think
you're really great.
Yeah, okay. I was listening in and he seemed very charming.
Well, that, and you know, similarly, my long-standing, probably one of my first celebrity crushes that I've had since I was about 12 years old, how disgusting is this, is David Bowie.
That's all right.
Oh my gosh, so handsome. Same age as my dad, but hey, let's just leave that aside.
Let's park that.
He's looked after himself a lot better than my dad. He's looked amazing till the end. But I was in the same room with him and I was sort of being dragged by one of his team. And I'd come and meet you and I resisted. Yeah. Because it just would have ruined the fantasy and the allure and listening to all of his music forevermore if I couldn't shake that stupid thing I'd said to him that time.
Yeah, because you'd have said the wrong thing and it would have been awful.
So I've just left
And he looked so beautiful. I was only briefly in the same room as him on a couple of occasions, but he had that thing where obviously he was really good looking and he was always really thin, wasn't he?
Yeah.
But in his later years, he had that amazing kind of, it sounds awful, but that kind of patina of richness. You know when somebody's rich, but they look really good looking? Yeah. There's something about that, you know, he's had his teeth done. He just looked really gorgeous.
And he had great style.
Yeah.
Particularly at the end. Really understated.
Yeah, he looked beautiful.
Oh, is it wrong to have celebrity
crushes? I was going
to
say, I think...
Do you think it's a bit weird now he's dead?
Well, it's not the same thing. I'm obviously not...
Are you going to go to the Brixton Shrine, which still exists?
Yeah, I have done. Yeah. But I'm still not over it.
No.
If I'm honest. I don't think the world really is. Silly. But I still...
The world went to shit when he died. He was obviously our guiding lodestar, and it's just, everything's gone wrong.
He still brings out an enormous array of emotions in me.
And lots of people, actually.
So what about you? Who's yours?
Can I just say, you started, never told us.
No, but because mine are really...
Because I think his is a real person, and he's just...
No, it's not. Stalking. No, mine aren't, like, famous people.
That's exactly. It's your next door neighbour. You're following them on Instagram.
No, it's not that weird, I promise. But... No, I guess it's also more about, and it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, and it's a very fine balance, I think, Instagram. There's a sense of it being a kick up the arse and motivating you. Then also you're actually going, oh God, I'm really crap because I'm not achieving, or I'm not doing what they're doing. So it's a fine balance between having a crush and envying, you know. But I think it's perfectly healthy, really, isn't it, to have crushes? I don't think you ever grow out of it. It's what we were talking the other day. You know, this idea that, you know, you suddenly turn a certain age and your skin is perfect, you never get spots.
Yeah, that's so annoying because it's completely not true.
So you will always get spots as an adult and you will always get crushes. They go hand in hand.
Do you... I mean, my husband knows my crushes. Does yours know yours?
Yeah. Pretty much. Also, I have to say, middle age is... you have to be careful about your crushes because then that is a funny era where your hormones go a bit haywire if you're a woman and you suddenly start fancying the kid's PE teacher or something really...
Which is far more scary, surely, because I was going to say, surely you're...
And also, you should never fancy a PE teacher. I mean, this is not me. I don't fancy PE teachers, but you know that
bunch of angry women at my daughter's. So there's no chance.
But do you know what I mean? It's suddenly, you know, or you know, a builder comes around, or you see, you know, some hunky cyclist and stuff, and you just, because your hormones are going a bit haywire in your middle age, you suddenly Like one day you can be like, I never want to look at anybody ever again. And the next day you think, ooh, makes me feeling chasing sexy. The milkman like, you're kind of really excitedly running down the road going, you look really hungry. Yeah. Like, who is this scary woman? Make them go away. Oh my God.
And we would just absolutely vilify men for the same thing.
Yes, of course. You can't do it. Yeah. You can't do anything like this, you know. Yeah. This is terrible.
Well, it's all harmless. I mean, if you don't actually act in a creepy way, it's all perfectly exactly harmless. That, a mental little crush and love affair.
Keep your hands to yourself.
I think my Ross still harbours one for Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah.
And which is fair enough.
Yeah, that is definitely fine. Well, I know people have had tried.
I think if you're in a relationship, surely you don't discourage the real crushes. Or you don't want them fancying the neighbour next door, but surely them fancying a Hollywood movie star they're never going to get near.
My husband that's very much likes Maggie Gyllenhaal. I think that's all right. She's nice.
Because she's cool.
Yeah.
Because I hate to say it, that's not a really obvious... She's bombshell. She's got a bit of substance to her. She's talented.
Although she turned up, I was sitting at a Marc Jacobs.
Oh, no, don't tell me she's awful.
No, she's not awful. But I remember I was jet lagged as hell and I was front row at the Marc Jacobs show. It was 2 hours late.
Mm.
And 2 hours after it was supposed to start, she sauntered in smiling and chatting. And I did have a fantasy of running up and giving her a swift slap for being so late.
Yeah, so the whole show has been delayed.
Do that. No. But so I'm a bit, me and Maggie, I don't know, we've got some beef.
Yeah. And you didn't go up to her and tell her what you thought, did you?
I didn't. I thought it very violently.
Imagine if you just waited till you to her. I just lined up and go, you're late. Twat. You're late, like an airplane.
Only Anna Wintour could get away with that.
No, you waited very patiently till you had a podcast so you could tell the world how you feel about my kick. Cool.
Poor Maggie.
Right,
that's
one
a long
more.
Time ago.
What are we doing now? What
do not really know everyone in your family.
That's okay.
Do you want to do a quick shout out to the reader one, Joe?
Oh, okay.
Where is she?
Thank you so much for your emails to that email address that I can never remember, but it's right in front of me now. isitjustmepodcast@gmail.com. And I want to thank Sarah for getting in touch and saying, is it just her who hates fake tan? Well, I've got to tell you, Sarah, I think it might be just me who still loves it.
I love it. I'm sorry.
Well, because I was going to say, Joe and I, we are... I think it's safe to say, Joe, you and I are not life's natural tanners.
I'm a tanorexic.
I'm one of those. I go in the sun, I get burnt, and then I go white pale again. So I don't bother now. I literally don't ever sit in the sun. I wear factor 50,
but
and then
it's
obviously
very high maintenance, though, isn't it? Fake tan.
Yeah, fake tan is, and I did go through a phase of loving it, and now I just got to a point where I just don't think it ever comes off well.
No,
it goes on. If you could stay looking as you do after that first initial wash off. Yeah. Amazing. But that patchiness...
People, like Victoria Beckham, who, you know, I mean, she has spoken before about like getting one every sort of like 10 days or
but
so.
But you've never seen any of her,
never, she's never got that horrible...
Weird hands.
Grimy... And...
But then she's
like
quite often wears long... You know, she wears those kind of long sleeves, doesn't she? You don't often see any part of her body anymore.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. Long sleeves is the answer. Yeah. I have to say, I'm a huge fan of fake tan because I grew up in... an area of Cheshire, which is essentially like Essex, but up north. So it's footballers' wives' territory. So when I grew up, everybody wore kind of white and had fake tan. And I was, you know, more interested on alternative music, which meant you were black, but I still wore the fake tan.
Yeah.
It was like kind of halfway there.
Mine is, I mean, this is going to sound so pathetic, and it's kind of deep-seated, because I was looking at Sarah saying, you know, I just decided to just embrace my pale skin, and I applaud that. Mm. It's a goal and an achievement that has always eluded me. And I think it comes from growing up in Sydney, where everybody talked about all summer was the depth of and richness of their tan.
Yeah, and they're super sporty and outdoors.
Yeah, and so I grew up being incredibly self-conscious about being really very pale and kind of getting teased about it all the time. So,
do you think it's generational? Because I think that there's, you know, people are a bit more health conscious, aren't they, generally?
Yes.
So they're a bit more like, and also they're more confident about embracing themselves, aren't they? So I do think that people are, like, you know, in their 20s, they go, I'm really pale, so what?
And
I look nice in these colours, and I look
my daughter's
like that.
Doing that, and I'm so pleased, because she's got beautiful skin, and she is quite happy in a short skirt in a way that I would not have been at her age.
Yeah.
So I really applaud people who...
And be nice to us older ones.
Yeah. I'm going to channel a bit more of Sarah's attitude, because I'm trying to, because I used to be always that person, hilariously, my friends always take the piss, because I get a spray tan before going on holiday.
Yeah.
So I would be browner at the beginning of a holiday and literally white at the end of it.
Because
I literally just don't tan.
Every time.
So they thought I was hilarious. But to be honest, I then got to a point where, so much as I feel grey, and it does give you confidence, I think, having a bit of a spray tan on that, when you have to literally disrobe on a beach or at a pool. So you, it does give you an initial bit of confidence, but then I have to say, you get to that halfway through the holiday when the patchiness kicks in, and you actually then just feel a bit gross and weird. And so I'm now trying to do what Sarah's doing. I'm trying to actually embrace being pale.
You know,
and
what
freckly.
You should do, I mean, you know, it's obviously a complete recommendation, and you can take mine. Go on holiday with kids and there will be no sunbathing whatsoever. And then you never have to worry.
But also, in talking about embracing middle age, I'm just one of those mums on the beach now. No one's really looking at me anyway.
That's true. No one looks. Yeah. And also, there is a really brilliant element of living in Britain. So basically, it's not... I mean, you know, it's never really that hot, is it? And actually, the bits that you have to expose, you know, in extremis, is your head and possibly your arms from the shoulder down and kind of knees down. That's it. That's not that much fake tan.
No, that's
all right.
So you can do that. But Sarah, I'm going to, you know, go for it. If you hate fake tan, I think that's cool.
Yeah. You're
just cooler than us.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we do love hearing from you. So if you have any other sort of suggestions for topics, please do email us at isitjustmepodcast@gmail.com.
Thank you.
Is it just me that doesn't know everyone in my family?
Yeah.
I mean, well, I think that's fairly commonplace, right?
Well, my father was one of six children.
Oh, wow.
So already I've got more cousins than I can count on all my hands and toes.
Yeah. So. My mum... I love her, and she's become something of like local folklore, really, because she's become slightly like the crazy family tree lady, because she just has a real interest in family trees. My mum is actually quite amazing. She's a bit of an oracle. Like, I can go to her and say, how exactly is that person my cousin again? And she'll just know. She's got it all mapped out.
Oh, that's so great.
It's become such a hobby that it's actually become, she now gets lots of other people coming to her going, I've heard you're great at this. And it's actually really a sweet, lovely thing to do.
Has she done it because she's hoping that she's like a distant royal or something like that?
she's trying to search out that mummy.
Yeah, are you sure you're my child?
Yeah.
But no, it is lovely, and it's actually quite nice knowing that, should I ever want to find out, it's there for me. And I think, you know, there are things you sort of take for granted. Because, you know, I was talking to some friends the other day about, horoscopes and, you know, your rising sign and all that kind of stuff. And somebody said, you need to know what time of day you were born. And I was like, 3:32 on a Sunday afternoon. They were like, how do you know that? And I was going, because my mum told me. Like, some of my friends don't know what day of the week they were born on, what time they were born on. And I don't know why, maybe my mum's just one of those people. I always know those little details. And I kind of love the fact that my mum has always kept that. Now, you know, like I said, I don't find it particularly fascinating, but it's nice to know that the information is there should I need it.
But the other thing that's interesting about that is that generally most people don't know beyond their grandparents because most people are not posh. So the thing that it's like the joy of who do you think you are, isn't it? So the joy of Danny Dyer finding that he's actually related to the Royals is absolutely brilliant, because most of us don't know. We know our grandparents, and we forgot to ask our mum and dad, and we forgot to ask our grandparents about anything. So we only know that far, and that's kind of fine. But people who run the bloody country, the posh people, they know everything. And that's their legitimacy is, I have born of this person, born of this person, born of this person. So I actually think it's brilliant if people know where they're from, because it's kind of staking a claim in the way that most normal people aren't allowed to stake a claim, because it's already sewn up.
It's such a British view of that subject as well, because when you come from Australia, there isn't really any
of course, of
that. I think there is... Hilariously, I think there is some sort of like trace back to convict stock on my side, but I don't know if my grandmother was making that up or not, because it was kind of cool to go back that far generationally in Australia. I don't know.
Well, it's funny how you say it, then I always slightly envy American people, because they will always have a very clear breakdown. They'll say things like, oh, you know, I am part Cherokee, Welsh, Irish. Yeah. English, Spanish, they'll know exactly what they are. And I'm like, God,
they're more proud of who they are. That's the American thing. They're more proud. They want to say, I am this, this, and this, and this is my identity, and that's great. They're very much belief in kind of self-identification, aren't they? Mm.
Yeah.
My family is a bit, it's not weird, but it's quite small. So my husband is Northern Irish. He has a big family. His family goes from Belfast to America to Yorkshire. His family is big. And my mum's a single only child, and her mum had a sister who had no kids. I mean, you know, it's just very, very, her side is very small. And my dad had two siblings, and so I know them as cousins, but we just don't see each other. Do you know what I mean? So my family is always essentially me, my mum, my dad, my brother, and it was my granny. And that's like, it. So I'm always really amazed. And so there is part of me that's slightly jealous. It's like, oh, you've got loads of cousins or
You know, there's the odd sort of big elven barbecue back home. Particularly my mother's fond of organising those when my husband and I go. And that's when it is a little bit like the royal family. When you look at, say, if you look at like, you look at a big picture of like everybody on the balcony at Buckingham Palace and there'll be an Armstrong Jones that you've never heard of and you've never seen before. And you, so if you Google it, oh, okay. So, and you forget how many bloody people there are in that family. There are people, there are cousins, and I intellectually, I know they're my cousin, but I've never had a conversation with them.
Yeah.
And so, and there's a Facebook group at the moment. A couple of my cousins have done this thing. They want to organize a big elven outing in Sydney to the football. And it's like people I've never heard of in my life going, yeah, I'll go. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know. Who are you?
Yeah. It's like, I mean, I do love that thing. You know, often I'm on the phone to my mum and she calls me at 8:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
And you know, I know you have sympathised. and she'll just start talking at me about people. And, you know, and I'm going, I literally have no clue who... But I put up with it and I nod and I say, But I've got no clue what she's talking about.
Yeah.
But it's like, they might as well be like people from the Archers. Like, do you know what I mean? It's like a fictitious...
As relevant as that.
People you've never seen before in your life and you're going, oh, I remember when you were this high. But, like, who the hell are you?
But then also, I don't know if this is a very Welsh thing, but also my family are terrible for... this might be a Welsh thing, but, you know, we would just call friends of my parents who were of a certain age, auntie and uncle. And then their children became our cousins. And I remember once telling one of those people, because I found out because I was a bit older... that we weren't actually blood related. They were devastated because they genuinely thought we were blood related.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's a Welsh thing or if that's a...
I find that my kids claim other kids sometimes. So that if we have... You know what I mean? So like we have friends and they're just... They're old friends. And if they're out of London in particular, they'll go, oh, that's my godbrother.
Oh.
And that's my godsister.
That's absolutely gorgeous. That's
my, yeah. And they... Because they want... They kind of want it. And, you know, we... It's funny. I think what's really interesting, quite weird, is how families... carry on with the same things without even realising it. So generally on my mum's side of things, the women have their kids late and they don't have very many. So basically our family is really, really small. And my kids don't have any direct cousins on my side because my brother's gay, he doesn't have any kids. So it's like, it's just, our family is small and they're desperate. I feel so sorry for my kids. They're desperate for more.
Aww.
So luckily they've got kind of an older... half brother, half sister, and they've got kids, and then my husband's got loads of kind of family, so they've got it on that side. But I find it so much that we go out and they go, "Are they my cousins?" And we're like,
"Oh, I have this only child who's perfectly 100% a-okay with being an only child. When she was younger, you say, would you like a brother or sister? No.
they go things like, no, I want a puppy.
Yeah, I've got a pretty sweet deal here.
Yeah.
I don't want anyone else in this room.
Also, when it comes to your time, and I say this as somebody who's had to grow up and now actually hosts Christmas, it makes it a lot simpler if you can get eight people on a table. You don't want any more than eight people.
Yeah, we only had us at Christmas. I tell you, can I just offer my top tip for Christmas?
Okay.
You just basically say, we don't want anyone else, so it's you. No, but you literally, this is what I mean about saying to people, just be direct, just say, okay, we're going to see you on Boxing Day, but not on Christmas Day. It's just us. So it's just me, my husband, and the two kids. And you ask the kids what they want to eat, because they never want to eat turkey.
Exactly.
They never want to eat turkey.
I
so
never
last
want to
year,
eat turkey. I don't know about
who
you.
Who want? Nobody does. So last year they said steak and chips. We had steak and chips. And this year they said chicken curry. So we made chicken curry the day before, and then literally you heat it up. And that takes out like 3 or 4 hours of stress.
What a Christmas miracle.
You open the presents, you have pancakes or whatever, you have a bit of a laugh, then you have the lunch, which everybody wants to eat.
Yeah.
And so you don't feel rejected because I'm only eating one roast potato. And then you do what you want. You know, go for a walk if you want, watch Doctor Who if you want. It's fine.
See, you wrote that book because you felt all out of sorts, but you've got your life sorted out.
And then my Christmas is sorted now. I'm like, yes.
Yeah. That's the next book, Christmas Sus.
Yes, Christmas Sus. Yeah, just never do a turkey again.
Miranda, thank you for joining us this week.
Oh, it's very nice. Very nice for you to come to my kitchen.
We've loved being here. And I've loved having my leg licked.
So that was me, wasn't it?
I'll leave it up to you to guess who it was.
Was it me? Was it Miranda?
Such gingham trousers are such a turn on.
It was the dog. And also I covered my legs in steak.
Always that.
Thank you so much, Miranda Sawyer. And see you next time on Is It Just Me?
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.